job was Lake City, and then, and then.
I guess due to the fact we don't have a forum, we can just go through a quick few things, go through, Does anybody have anything before we jump right into Templeton?
Well, before you got here, we were just talking about why we meet on Monday at 9 a.m., and you know how hard it is to get people up here and everything, for a Monday morning meeting.
Well, it's a couple of things. One is Lee comes, and after he does our meeting, he has a quick lunch, and then he does OPD, so they schedule him almost back-to-back. I mean, he gets a little bit of a break. So this way, when he's traveling here, it's, you know, one whole day is dealt with things. I mean,
well, we share his expense. Diane was confirming that, you know, so that's part of the reason I think we set that that way. Plus, he has a lot of clients around the state that it may have been when we started all this, Monday was a good day that it fit in his schedule. But I guess the question being is how hard.
I'd be happy to look at alternatives if the board would like. Yeah, but once we get into a slot from year to year, and that's the same because we keep them all. That's right, right.
It's a, honestly, it's a hard day on me. I have a meeting on every Monday morning at 9 a.m.
All right.
So once a quarter, I miss it. Now, I don't know about the lady from the hospital, what her issues are, but, I mean, I'll miss it. I'll miss my other meeting to do this, but it would be better, I think, on a lot of people, you know, if we could find a better day down the road. You know, I know we've already scheduled the rest of this year.
Which is only one more meeting, really. And actually, that meeting is when we adopt our schedule for next year, so if you'd like me to take a look at alternatives, I'd be glad to do it.
If you, I mean, we'd have to coordinate with OPD because it only makes sense that one day you visit the city.
Yeah, I mentioned too to Glenn, because we have so many clients all around the state, but in the area as well.
So
if
so
we could
might
tie in with police, we probably could tie in with somebody else.
Well, then I guess we have to let you try to coordinate that
for us.
Yeah, we'll
just the alternatives. Is morning or afternoon okay, just so it's not Monday?
I think mornings are okay with me. It's just, it seems Monday's a bad day, you know?
Okay.
And I would defer this to Rosemary a little bit, too, because she's the one that has to coordinate bringing in all these people, you know?
Right.
Is there a better day? Is Monday good for you? I mean, don't...
I mean, any day is okay except for the fact that I need to make sure that the data is available. So really this type of week, which is like the second week in August, is preferable. So whether it's a Monday or a Tuesday or when, it doesn't really matter. I mean, traveling wise, obviously it's better on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. I don't, because I fly out on Sunday. But either way, this day is always sort of worked in the slot. But for my data to be ready and everything that I want to be ready, usually the second week of August, like the second week, 6 weeks after quarter end is ideal.
But quarterlies typically run, they begin, well, actually it went a couple of weeks ago, but they run almost all the way through September.
Right.
So I'm sure there's, if we would even could look at September, we could go for, we'd have alternatives.
Well, if we could keep it off of a Friday and maybe a Monday, you know,
okay.
Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday.
Okay.
It's probably preferable for you too, instead of flying out on a Sunday or flying home on a Saturday.
And we prefer mornings?
I'm a morning guy.
Yeah, I am too.
Mornings are fine with me.
I think
the reason we wait till 9 is getting people in here. You know, getting up from the airport or whatever they got to do. But
okie doke, we'll take a look at that for next year.
Thank you.
And I have other boards that schedule all their meetings for the year, so sort of the last 2 weeks of like August is bad for me, and you know, like as I go to Massachusetts,
that's
what there's
I think
all
we,
like
we may be into September, but that would be all right.
That's fine. September is way open.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
I'm gonna go get Templeton.
I hope you really can sit up here with
you're
us.
You're looking correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically 20 minutes, go over your process, returns, that type of thing, what was in the letter, and then
okay. leave about 5-10 minutes for questions and answers.
Okay, sounds good. Well, good morning, and thank you all for your time again. I do recognize a few familiar faces from the last meeting and a few new faces. So just to formally introduce myself, my name is Eugenia Dominguez. I'm your relationship manager for City of Ocala. I've been with Franklin Templeton for 11 years and part of a client service group for about half of that time. And in my role, I work with a number of institutional clients, such as yourselves. And with me is Nicole Gallinet, also in the client service group. She also attended the last meeting, which I believe was back in February of 2009. And she was born and raised here in Ocala, so it's a big treat to be here today. But okay, so let's get started. I want to make sure I'm covering what you want to hear, so please let me know if you have any questions or feel free to tell me to speed up or slow down at any time. But basically, during our last meeting, we covered performance through the end of December of 2008. And I don't need to remind you all what a challenging period this was, not only for global equities in general, but really for all asset classes. 2009, we saw a strong rebound in equities, which certainly helped to ease some of the pain that was caused in 2008, and we saw indices were up over 30%. And then so far this year, we've seen that the global economy has continued to recover. We've seen that this recovery, as we expected, has been choppy and bumpy, and we expect this to continue throughout the rest of the year. Now, as opposed to 2009, where we saw that investors may have gotten a little bit too optimistic on the speed of the recovery, we feel that this year they may have gone to the other extreme, maybe have gotten a little too pessimistic at times. And we saw, for example, in May, indices were down 10% because investors have focused on negative headlines, such as sovereign debt issues in Europe, a fear of a slowdown in China, and China has been seen as the savior of the global economic recovery. Geopolitical tensions in Asia. We have our fair share of news here in the U.S. between high unemployment and deficits. So all these factors together have really increased the uncertainty and increased the volatility in markets. As long-term value investors, more often than not, we welcome volatility because it presents our strategy with good opportunities to move in and out of stocks. Because when you have such high swings, we see that investors tend to overreact, which allows us good opportunities to move in and out of stocks. So we can talk about some of those opportunities in just a few minutes. The first tab mainly covers firm overview, the team, philosophy. I'll run rather quickly through this part, but if you turn to page 3, no major changes since our last meeting. Assets listed on here are for our parent company and the individual autonomous groups. This is through the end of June. Parent company was managing roughly $570 billion in assets. Below the parent company, there are a number of autonomous investment groups. Each has its own distinct style and function. Today, we're going to focus on Templeton, which is where you're invested in. Templeton dates back to 1940, and the process and philosophy that we use is the same one that Sir John Templeton started back then. And we strictly focus on global, international, and emerging markets equity. I'll skip through the next few pages, but if you wanted to see the assets that the group manages, you can see what percentage are global equities, international equities, or what portion are institutional. And then the map page on page 5 I'll skip as well, but just shows you the global presence. Now on page 6, this page is very similar to what I presented during our last meeting. We continue to have a relatively flat organizational structure where we have our Chief Investment Officer, Gary Motel, in the top tier. And Gary's a 30-year veteran in the industry, and he's also the lead portfolio manager for the fund that you're invested in, which is the Foreign Equity Series. Below Gary is the Director of Research, Director of Portfolio Management, and basically these individuals, it's their responsibility to make sure that every Templeton client is receiving a Templeton portfolio and that the Templeton investment process and philosophy is being applied. What's new this year that you didn't see last year is this position, Deputy Director of Research, Heather Arnold. It's a new position. And Heather was promoted, and it was to acknowledge not only the good work she's been doing as a portfolio manager, as an analyst, but also she's lead of our junior analyst program. It's a program that we've had for about a decade now, and she's done a great job there. So it was in recognition of that good work. And then the bottom is what makes up the rest of the global equity group. In total, we have 37 analysts. They're located in 7 offices across the globe. And you can see that they have an average of 17 years of experience in the industry, an average of 11 years tenure with the firm. So it's a group that's very experienced. They've been working together for many years now. And since our last meeting in February of 2009, we have had no departures. We had one addition, which it was a promotion from a junior analyst to a full analyst position, but other than that, no other changes. And then the next page shows you how they divide their responsibilities. The only change since our last meeting is that a few research assignments were shuffled within the group, and it's not uncommon for this to happen. It's just it's a good way to keep our analysts fresh and for them to work in different sectors, but our analysts continue to be aligned by global industries. So you'll see there are 8 different sectors listed on this page. Within each sector, there's an industry group, and it's each analyst's job to become experts in these areas that they're covering, and then to present ideas to the group. So really, your portfolio is receiving the best thinking and the best ideas generated by the group. Because while Gary Motel is your portfolio manager, he can only buy and sell securities that have been recommended by the group and ultimately approved by the director of research.
And how often does the group meet? Do they all meet? Like
they do.
Via conference call, or how does
yes,
that work?
Yes, we have meetings on Tuesday and Thursday, so those are routine meetings where all the analysts call in. So we have an analyst in Australia and Singapore and Fort Lauderdale, Toronto. They all dial in, and this is where they talk about new and existing ideas. We have weekly sector meetings. We have biannual off-site meetings where they all fly in and meet personally, but there are numerous phone calls and emails.
And where's Gary located?
In Fort Lauderdale. Okay. And then on this first half, the last page I was planning to cover is Templeton's investment philosophy. And I did want to spend a minute or two on this page because I feel that understanding this philosophy is really going to help to explain how we're managing City of Ocala's assets. This is a philosophy, as I mentioned before, it's been applied since 1940. And the best way to describe it are with these three tenets: value, patience, and bottom up. When we say value, we are a core value manager, but it doesn't mean we're precluded from buying growth stocks. And when we talk about the opportunities we have found, we have actually found great opportunities in the traditional growth stocks as defined by an index. When we say value, we mean that our analysts are searching the globe, looking for stocks that they feel are trading at a discount, but have the potential to double over a full business cycle. And we consider a full business cycle to be approximately 5 years. Once we find these opportunities, we're patient, so that's the second tenet. We take a long-term view. Average holding period is about 5 years, so the proof of this is if you look at the portfolio's turnover, it historically has averaged about 20%, so it's consistent with this long-term view. And actually, this long-term view is an advantage. It differs from what the marketplace views in regards to holding period. In the New York Stock Exchange, the holding period tends to be about 6 months, but we do take that longer-term view. And then lastly is bottom-up. Portfolios are built from the bottom-up on a stock-by-stock basis. So we're not making top-down decisions. We don't have an economist on staff. It's really just on a company-by-company basis. And when we talk about sector and industry weightings, please keep that in mind, because whatever weightings we talk about is just a direct result of where they're finding value. So I know I covered a lot in this first tab, but any questions before we talk about performance?
The only thing I question is, as a group, do you sit and think that the way the economy has changed and people are more reactionary about how they're dealing with stocks and bonds, is that changing the way that your mindset is to be patient, wait 5 years? Because historically, for the last 2 years, everything has been gut feelings, and the market has been changing so much
right. That
you think that it's going to mellow out after a little bit and get back to what it was? Or do you think that we're changing deep?
I can tell you that our analysts continue to take a long-term view. They're not changing their process, even.
Are there talks about it? Are they thinking that maybe they need to revisit, or they're thinking everything's going to get back onto that?
No.
The way it used to be.
They just think that if you look at normalized earnings and normalized cash flows and asset values, you can find value in stocks, and then to take that long-term view is the best approach, rather than just focusing on what's happening, you know, this quarter or this year, and taking that long-term approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I wouldn't say they're changing. Even through the financial crisis, a lot of people said, are you changing the way that you're doing things? And they asked the same question after the TMT bubble. In the late 90s or in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I'm just curious because we have unprecedented, you know, experience here that I'm wondering if the great minds, because I surely am not one of them, that I wonder if, you know, maybe the mindset's starting to change, that what's been historical, now we've experienced something that's totally unrelated. I mean, we can't compare to it at all, and I'm wondering, you know, if the great minds actually sit and ponder on that. I don't know if you'd actually be honest and tell us, but I was curious if, you know, if it's crossed the discussion table, so to speak, you know.
No, they have not changed, and no talks about changing.
Sir Templeton said it's this way, and this is the way we're going to go.
It's this way, and you know what, every market cycle is different, I agree, but we've been through many different market cycles, and the TMT bubble is a great example.
Just feel I gotta ask, I'm curious, that's all.
No, I'll let you know if there is an announced change, but as of now, they're
well,
continuing.
Well, that's fair, you know, it's...
No, absolutely.
You said it does affect your selling, though. It does sort of, as you get the volatility, there's more opportunities to either sell or buy in different things that maybe
right.
you wouldn't have the opportunity to have purchased before.
Correct. So during times of optimism, you see that stocks maybe are running too much, and a good example are your material stocks. These are stocks that we bought in 2000 just because they were very expensive. They continued to run, and in 2005 we had the opportunity to sell out of some of these stocks. So. Okay, if you turn to page 10, just a few quick facts on the fund in which you're invested in. And it's an international mandate. It's our flagship non-U.S. portfolio. I mentioned it was managed by Gary Motel. It dates back to 1990. Assets through the end of June were $5.3 billion. Of that 5.3, 7.4% were in cash. This cash weighting is a little bit higher than what we tend to have. We normally consider less than 5% to be fully invested. But because of the strong rebound last year, we did see stocks just significantly increased. So there were a number of unfilled orders. And then as you mentioned, so far this year with the volatility, we have been able to move into stocks. We have also found opportunities to sell out of. So it's kept that cash weighting a little bit higher than normal, but I would anticipate that weighting is going to come down this year. You do have exposure to emerging markets at 16.7%. And that's pretty much in line with what it was during our last meeting. Last meeting was 15%. And we remain concentrated in areas such as South Korea, India, China, Taiwan, and we'll see that when we look at geographic weightings.
What's your range there usually?
I would say average anywhere between 10 to 7, 15.
Like yeah, it's really, that's been the
mid-teens to upper teens.
And you have a maximum that you can go, is it?
No maximum.
Okay.
But right now with the strong run-up in emerging markets, I would anticipate that weight would increase this year. Emerging markets have had a very strong run. And then the weighted average market cap is higher than the index, just like it was during our last meeting, and that's just due to the fact that we've been finding more value in large cap stocks over the past few years. Next page shows performance through June, and as you reflect, oh no, sorry, page 11, one more page. Performance through June. And as you requested, we included both gross and net of fee returns. The first index I listed is EFA, which is your primary index. And that's just there for informational, for comparison purposes. And I've also included MSCI All Country World ex-US. If you compare your portfolio return versus your primary index, we've outperformed over each time period listed. And that's if you look at your net return for the portfolio. So we're pleased with relative performance. If you look at absolute returns and focus on the year to date, your portfolio has been down 12%, where the index, the primary index, was down 13%. So it's been a rough first half of the year. And if you look to the left-hand column, that three-month return, you can see that the second quarter, your portfolio was down 11.5%. So most of the underperformance can be explained with what happened in the second quarter. And then to narrow that down a little bit further, May was a big month where markets or indices were down 10%. And this was a time where I said investors may have gone a little bit too pessimistic. And we saw that across all 10 sectors, they had negative returns. So really not many places to hide during the second quarter, but what we did see is that the more cyclical areas, so your materials and your energies, had the worst performance for the quarter, and your more defensive areas, so your telecoms and consumer staples, had the least negative performance. And this is a reversal from what we saw during the fourth quarter and during the beginning, or the first quarter of this year. Also wanted to mention that during the first half of the year, currency had a pretty significant impact on your performance. Your portfolio is overweight Europe, and we're underweight Japan. And as you know, the euro has been under considerable pressure. The euro was down for the first half of the year 17%, and the Japanese yen was up 5%. So when you look at your total currency allocation for the first half of the year, it probably cost your portfolio about 8% of return. So out of the 12%, 8% could be explained because of currency. The question always comes up during client meetings, if we hedge currencies. And we don't hedge. We have never hedged currencies. We feel that hedging currencies is more of a top-down, short-term call, which is not how we view investments. It's more of that longer-term approach. We feel that if you take a long-term approach and you own a diversified portfolio, currency movements, while they can't be significant in the short term, in the longer term, they tend to even out. And I'll use the euro as an example. Exposure to the euro helped in 2009, as we saw it significantly hurt for the first half. And then in July, the euro had a huge bounce. I believe it was up 8%. So again, in the long run, taking everything into consideration, currencies tend to even out. Having said that, currency is an important consideration when our analysts are viewing investments, but they build in their long-term assumptions into the currency models they're viewing. And at this time, they're not expecting a significant shift, either up or down in the euro, to be more specific.
What is the effect of the one-year return versus the ACWI? What sort of contributed to the difference there?
Emerging markets. So we are underweight emerging markets versus the index.
Okay.
So not having
as much
exposure. Would explain the bulk of it. Okay, if you turn to page 13, this is a great page to talk about performance. This is focusing more on the 1 year, and I decided to put this in since it's been a little over a year since our last meeting, but all these, the data on here is relative to the index, and it's 1 year through June. The table on the right-hand side shows you each of the 10 sectors, and for your portfolio, you can see you have your average weight and your total return, and then you have that same information for the index, and then on the right-hand side, you have your total effect. Total effect includes everything from allocation effects, so were you in the right sector at the right time, stock selection, were you in the right stock at the right time, and then currency impact is also included. And then that total effect is graphed on the left-hand side. But if you look at the total effects that were positive, it would be the top four sectors are the contributors. And if you focus on your portfolio's total return versus the total return of the index, you can see that your portfolio had significantly stronger stock selection in each one of these sectors. In financials, that was your top contributor. So in addition to having strong stock selection, so 10 versus 0.8, you also had an underweight, so 22% versus 25%. Being underweight this weak sector also added value. And when we talk about financials, this includes banks, diversified financials, insurance, and real estate stocks. Both for your portfolio and the index, the bulk of the exposure is in banks. But if you look at the stocks that we own versus the index, they differ quite significantly in that we have more exposure to the Asian banks versus the index has more exposure to the European banks. And these Asian banks were much better positioned going into the financial crisis and still continue to be in better positions. And your strongest contributor there were your Indian banks, ICICI Bank and Housing Development Financial Corp were some of your strongest contributors. These are banks that are benefiting from the loan growth in India. Information technology is also listed, strong stock selection. This is an area that we're overweight. We've been moving into this area for a couple of years now. It's a sector that has very good growth prospects, and it's an area that we feel that stocks in this area will provide long-term returns or long-term potential for your portfolio. Industrials. Also very good stock selection. When we talk about industrials, that really includes, I mean, it's a catch-all industry. It includes servicing companies to airlines, transportation to huge conglomerates to capital goods, to staffers. And the contributors there for this year that you own are the European staffing companies. We own Adecco and Randstad. Those are very strong performers. And then consumer discretionary, the notable contributors there were auto and media. In auto, we owned BMW. So BMW posted very strong results, and it's been because they've increased their production. They have the new 5 Series model has done very well. They have surging sales in China. And then also BMW being based in Germany, and the fact that the euro has depreciated so much, it's benefited exporters in Germany. So BMW benefited from that. And media, we own a stock such as BSkyB. We tend to own the media leaders. BSkyB is British Sky Broadcasting, and it's a stock that has very strong performance. On the flip side, the areas that lag are just at the bottom, and if you look at the bottom four, two of those areas are simply due to our underweight position. So consumer staples, you can see that we're half the weight of the index, 4.5 versus 10. Our stock selection was better, but the fact that we were so underweight in the area that it was the top performing sector was 19% return. Just being underweight detracted. We have historically been underweight consumer staples as the stocks in these sectors tend to look expensive. And also dating back to Sir John Templeton, we don't invest in stocks that are related to tobacco, gambling, or alcohol. So we naturally can't invest in a number of stocks that are in the index. So being underweight, they're hurt. Materials was the second best performing sector, and we're significantly underweight materials, as I mentioned before. We started trimming in 2005, so being underweight that sector also hurt. Materials is an area that we feel like there are very good companies, but there is a lot of good news and high expectations built into some of these stocks. We tend to like the areas where there are lower expectations, such as in healthcare, and that was actually your top detractor. Healthcare is an area that we've been moving into simply because we feel like investors have been focusing on short-term news issues such as patent expirations, generic competition, uncertainty with regulation and reform. And while we agree with all these challenges, we feel like investors aren't pricing in the fact that many of these companies have extremely strong balance sheets. They're paying great dividend yields. In some cases, they're paying 6 or 7% dividend yields. They have diversified products, so yes, they do have exposure to that patent expiration, but they also have exposure to vaccines, generics, consumer health products, so that all those different areas that they have exposure to aren't being priced in. And then also the big catalyst for some of these healthcare companies can be an increase in demand, both from a globally aging population and also from an increase in demand in emerging markets. So I feel like these stocks will perform well going forward. Any questions on any of these other sectors?
Can you highlight some of the names maybe in utilities and healthcare? I mean, sure. All the other ones sort of look like your returns were either significantly above the index returns or fairly close. But in utilities and healthcare, it looks like the names that you chose didn't perform as well as the names that were in the index.
Absolutely. So I'll start with utilities, negative 20% versus minus 4%. In utilities, we only have, I believe we have 3 or 4 different stocks. They're all based in Europe and these European holdings, just because of the fact that they're domiciled in Europe, their stocks were pretty significantly impacted because of sovereign debt issues and that I mentioned before, they've been driven by just macro headline news. But many of these companies have exposure outside of their home country. So a good example for utilities is Iberdrola. It's based in Spain, so the fact that it's in Spain, there's been so much news on Spain, that stock was impacted, but a lot of their revenue comes from outside of Spain. So, and that's really the case in many of our European holdings. We own larger global multinational firms that they have been impacted just because of where they're domiciled, but they actually have a good, very good percentage of their revenue is outside of their home market.
So you still feel they're good companies, they've just been impacted
Okay. Out of those holdings that we have not been trimming. And then in healthcare, yes, minus 1.8 versus 10.8, and that was attributed to 2 stocks. There's a stock that we own, Lonza, based out of Switzerland. They provide chemicals to pharmaceuticals, and this company has had a number of challenges, operational challenges. They've had canceled and delayed orders, and we actually started trimming that stock. So this is an example of a stock that our thesis has not worked out. And we've been trimming. And I believe that stock was down, I'm going to say, maybe 20%. So that caused most of the underperformance. And then we also own Merck, and Merck had 2 setbacks with drug approvals. And they also, during the fourth quarter, they had to post on their balance sheet a large R&D expense. So they posted weak results, and that impacted the stock. But this is a stock that we feel is very well positioned, and we're not trimming the stock. This is a stock that should perform well. Any other sectors that you mentioned?
No, just those 2.
Okay. Page 14, I won't cover due to time, but I normally don't talk a lot on this page just because our analysts are aligned by sectors. We look at the globe on a sector basis, not by markets. But I'll point out Japan just because it was such a large contributor. You can see we're significantly underweight Japan, 2% versus 22%. This has been the case for many years. I would say we've been overweight Japan probably since the mid-80s. And it's not a top-down view, it's a bottom-up. We're just finding better opportunities outside of Japan. It's a market that didn't perform well, so being underweight, Japan helped. Any questions on any of these markets? Okay. Page 15, are we okay with time so far?
Okay.
Page 15 just shows you, again, your sector allocations. This is through the end of June. The page that we focused more on was average weight. This is through the end of June. And this shows you the different industry groups. So we've talked about the areas where we're underweight, such as materials and consumer staples, and you can see those are our largest underweight. So materials 8% underweight, consumer staples 6%. The areas where we have been finding values is where we're significantly overweight. You can see your largest overweight is in telecommunication services. You have 12.9 versus 5.6 weight, so we're 7% overweight. This is an area that we have been moving into, and again, it's because these companies have very good balance sheets, good dividend yields, they're generating a good amount of free cash flow, and they're in much better position than they were than during the TMT days. And in this area, we tend to own the European and the Asian stocks, and as I mentioned before, the global multinationals. The second area where we're significantly overweight is information technology. Briefly discussed it on the previous page as well, but you can see most of our exposure is in semiconductor and semiconductor equipment, and we own stocks such as Samsung Electronics in South Korea, Taiwanese Semiconductor Corp. And these are the low-cost producers, stocks that we've owned for a number of years, and they have performed well in your portfolio. And then more recently in the sector, we've been adding to software and services, so we own a stock like Nintendo and SAP. Again, strong performers. Energy, you can see, is the third largest overweight, and I would say the bulk of our overweight is due to a few stocks that are not in the index, such as Canadian stocks. We own two Canadian stocks, and IFA is not invested in Canada, and then the stock in emerging markets. But in energy, we own the larger integrated oil companies, not necessarily the exploration and production stocks. Any other sectors that you would like for me to highlight?
Are you adding to energy, or, I mean, what are your
we
thoughts
have,
there?
You know, recently we've added to a Canadian energy company, the Talisman. I would say where we're adding now, it's more of an eclectic mix, whereas before we were adding more into these areas that I mentioned, the telcos, information technology, consumer discretionary. Lately it's been, we've added a few energy, we've added a few financials. But yes, out of the newest holdings would be Talisman in Canada. Page 16, very similar page, but it's geographic allocations. As I mentioned, the bulk of your exposure is in Europe. You can see it's core Europe, so UK, Germany, France, and Switzerland is where we have the most exposure. And if you look at the stocks that we own, they're the big multinationals. So in the UK, it's a stock like GlaxoSmithKline, BAE, British Broadcasting. In Germany, we own a BMW or Siemens. France, we own Sanofi, Aventis, Total. These are stocks that, again, they're domiciled in Europe, but have a great amount of exposure outside of Europe. And an interesting fact that I just learned about this past quarter is this weighting of 72%. If you look at the stocks that we hold and look at the revenues that they generate, roughly only 43% of the revenues that they generate are within Europe. Everything else is outside of Europe. And a lot of these companies that we're investing in have quite a significant exposure to emerging markets, particularly the healthcare and the telecom stocks. Asia is an area that we continue to like. You can see that excluding Japan, we're overweight Asia. Asia, there are great growth rates in Asia. You have a huge consumer base, and you can see our exposure is in China and South Korea. We talked about the Indian banks. In Taiwan, but again, Japan stands out as being a large underweight position. And then towards the bottom, emerging markets, I mentioned 16.7% weight. We feel like we own the best emerging market stocks at great valuations, but going forward, I don't expect this weight to increase too much in the future, just because valuations have gone up. Page 17 is just your top 10 holdings, and the point here that I'd like to make is your top 10 make up 20% of the entire portfolio. And this is really a key risk measure. It's just to make sure you don't have a lot in one stock. If you look at the stocks in the different countries and industries, you can see that there are in 8 different countries, seven different industries. So it's a very well-diversified group of stocks. We've talked about some of these names already, or I've mentioned. But this is a good representation of the type of stocks we've been finding in large cap, global, quality names.
Now, when do you start to trim something that's maybe run for a while? Do you start taking some of the gains, and when do you sort of make that decision?
It all depends on valuation. So we basically move in when valuations are low. So forward-looking PEs that our analysts calculate would be mid to single-digit PEs. and once they start to move up, maybe closer to the double-digit PEs, is when they feel like they're reaching full valuation and they start to trim.
Okay.
And when we start building positions, we always start with very small positions, and eventually with price appreciation or when we have opportunities to move in, we'll add. And maybe a good page to open it up for questions will be on this page, on page 20. These are portfolio characteristics for your fund versus the index. And the point here being that if you look at price to earnings, price to book, and price to cash flow, you can see that for your portfolio, they're lower than the index. So we're doing what we say that we do. We're value investors. We buy stocks that are cheaper than the index. And we've been consistently doing this throughout different market cycles. If you look at the dividend yield, you can see that the yield is higher than the index, and that again is due to the fact that we have found value in stocks that are paying the dividends. And it's really a great metric, because in many cases you're getting paid to wait, or you wait for some of these stocks to be recognized and to start having strong performance. Now going forward, I guess maybe in concluding remarks, I would say that yes, we feel like the global economy is recovering. Expect it to continue to be choppy, but you can also expect for our analysts to continue to apply the same disciplined investment process philosophy that they have used for many years throughout many different market cycles. Our analysts are extremely comfortable with the holdings in your portfolio. What happened in 2008, when pretty much we had that panic sell-off, presented great opportunities. So we were able to upgrade the stocks in your portfolio, and we feel that going forward, these are the stocks that are going to benefit our investors. So I will open up for questions.
I'm pretty impressed with this chart on page 21. Outperform versus underperform.
Yes, and you know, I didn't cover it. I was planning on covering it, but I only had information through March, but the June chart will be very similar. And this, unfortunately, I only had it versus the MSCI All Country World XUS. If you had it versus EPA, it would look even better. So I didn't reference it, but yes, this focuses on the five-year return, which that is what we view as a long-term investment period. And you can see that if you look at quarterly returns going back to the fund's history, five-year returns, looking at them on a quarterly basis since the fund's inception, we've outperformed 57 out of 58 times. So
we like these charts. I show the base charts a lot.
Okay. I should have started with this.
Well, then, Templeton, we've had money with them from going back to when I was still here, so that says something to the tenure of how good a job you've done over the time that you've been a manager here for the city of Ocala. But that's great performance, and I don't have any other questions.
I think they stayed on top of the curve, and that's, I mean, what else can you ask them to do? Market really has been
keep outperforming.
Okay.
Keep telling them.
Thanks for making the trip up. You came from Fort Lauderdale, you said?
Yes.
Actually,
had the opportunity to stay in Orlando this weekend. Didn't quite make it to Aquatica yesterday because of the weather. So.
What's Aquatica?
That's the park, the sister park of SeaWorld.
Yeah.
The water
okay.
park.
Oh, okay.
So gotcha. The weather didn't allow us to go yesterday.
Why? You're going to get wet anyway, so what is raining now?
I have a 15-month-old and a 3-year-old. I don't think it would have been very good. Or my husband. I would have been okay. So.
I tell my wife that all the time. I mean, you go to the beach and it rains and everybody runs wet. I mean, you're there to get wet anyway.
I know.
I mean, when lightning starts, I understand that. Right, but.
Which of you grew up here in Ocala?
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So I actually stayed with my grandparents, and my mom still lives here as well. So
what is your name or your maiden name?
Gallinette, and my mom and my grandparents are Learys.
O'Learys?
Well, they were O'Learys when they came over from Ireland, but we haven't been O'Leary in a while.
Okay.
For a few generations, so just Leary now. So,
oh, good.
Been here for a long time, so I always ask her if I can...
Can you come, huh?
What?
Get the company to pay for a trip, huh?
No, actually, I said, don't worry, I won't charge anything.
Yeah.
I'm already up here. So she let me tag along, so thanks for having us.
Cool, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
Do you need an extra book? I have an extra book or...
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you all. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you again. Thanks for coming out. All right, see ya.
Bye, guys. Thank you. Do you want us to shut this or leave it open?
That's all right. Well, we did our yearly.
Yes. And I did bring, I was looking at the schedule, and we basically did it, we've had manager reviews for everybody. You have 7 managers, so we've got everybody done. Next meeting, we should start bringing the people back again. So we got Pyramus and Atos that I'd like to bring in next meeting, because they came November of last year. So we're sort of on a cycle, if that's okay. So I'll bring the 2 of them in next meeting to keep on our schedule of seeing everybody. And you don't have to do it, you know, just every year necessarily. I think it's good to see them regularly. But if you push it off a quarter or 2, depending on your schedule, it's not a big deal, so.
Part of that too is good for new people to come on this board.
Right, you know? Exactly. And so you know your manager.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, she didn't get to sit in because.
Right.
You know, but I can remember when we hired Templeton, they've been on from day one.
They've had some ownership changes and some different change in staffing since then, but we ended up, there was some talk a couple years ago about maybe. Moving, but they've been doing well, so I think it was a good decision to keep them.
Does that 16.7% in emerging markets, does that trouble you that that they have that much? Because you questioned her on it. I see the index doesn't have any allocation here.
No, we actually like, in a smaller plan your size, I like to have a manager in there that has emerging markets.
Okay.
That way you get exposure without having to have a dedicated emerging market manager and pay the extra fees or something like that. So I do like that she has emerging markets.
Okay.
We typically want our plans to have somewhere between 3% and 5% in emerging, and given that they have the 16%, it sort of works out for your total fund to be in that range. It probably ends up being around 3% of the total fund, which is, I think, a fairly good level, so you have that exposure, that diversity.
Okay.
So I could go into performance if that's what you like. Okay. And I'll keep it brief. I know that there's only 2 of you here, and y'all have your performance books. I'll flip to tab 1, page 1. I like to sort of go over a backdrop of what the markets did for the quarter. And I sort of say this before, but you know, if the markets are up 10% and you're only up 8%, you may think 8% is good, but if the markets are up 10, you should have been up at least 10. If the markets are down 10 and you're only down 5, then you did well, but if somebody looked at it on an absolute basis, they would say you were down 5 and that was bad. So we try to look at the landscape a little bit so you can sort of see what's going on in the world. Just as a reminder, our research group puts these market conditions together every quarter. They do offer a webinar for anybody who wants. It doesn't just have to be board members. City people can be on the webinar, and it's a night you get to ask questions, you get to hear our director of research talk about them and the market. So if you're ever interested, anybody can, and I know Alicia gets the invite, but I think it was like a week or 2 ago that they go through the market conditions. So if you ever wanted to sit in on that, it's a great opportunity to see how we develop them and we pick what we put in here. The Fed funds target rate, as you know, they've kept the target rate where it is. They expect the economic recovery to be modest for an extended period of time. So no real changes there. Labor market, unemployment was at 9.5% compared to the 9.7% that it was at the end of Q1 2010. And if you heard a couple, like maybe a week ago, they came out with July's number. July's number was basically unchanged from June's number, but they did say that the government had laid off census workers and the private sector had started to hire some people, so that's sort of a positive there.
Yeah, the other thing I see is more people are leaving the job market and taking early Social Security, so that skews the numbers too. Which puts a burden on the reverse end that we're not really thinking about.
Right. Well, they keep sending me my Social Security thing in the mail.
Yeah, for what it's worth, they just keep you hoping, huh?
But it's funny because, you know, my age or what they send it to me, and they have this caveat in there now. I don't know if you've seen it, but they send it and they say, by 20 whatever, you will only get 70% of your benefits if we exist in current legislation.
If they exist, yes. That's what's scaring me as I get closer.
So you actually read those things?
Well, I sort of look at it. Well, I thought it was funny that they started to add that, like, it'll be bankrupt and, like, they put all this language in there now.
It's a joke she gets to share with her husband. Yeah.
Which is when I retire, there'll be no money.
That's right. We're going down the tubes.
But what Arnie was talking about has a direct impact on that, because this morning's paper, that article about the guy that was 63, finally gave up looking for a job after 3 or 4 years, and now he's filed for early Social Security benefits. He hadn't planned to do so, as I read the article, you know, until he was probably 66 or 7 or so.
Right.
But if you can't find work, so the strain is that you're having to pay out benefits earlier than the system was hoping to do so, and that's...
You hope the actuary calculations are good, what they discount people's early hours.
Well, and the thing I look at, the actuary, you know, figures is, I'm wondering how many employers think that they need to hang on now, because what the stock market's doing, I mean, where I was putting extra money, it's going, you know, it's going down the tubes, and it means I got to work longer to supplement that, which screws up the actuary's numbers too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, buy it now, it's cheap.
My notes too.
Yeah, that's why I lost so much when I went and decided to move it all in May.
So if you look at page 2, we'll just go over the equity indices and the fixed indices. If you look at the top right corner is what, you know, and she talked about May, and May was, you know, the worst month that we had. But the core, because of May, was down significantly. The S&P was down 11%. Russell 2000 down 9%, which is small cap indices. EFI was down 14%. Emerging markets was down 8%. You look at the 1-year numbers, they are positive. But then you look at the 3-year, the 5-year, and the 10-year, and, you know, if you look at, since we have data for the S&P, the average return is, I think, around 9.5% for the S&P through June. But this is one of the 10-year time periods where the S&P is actually negative. When we do asset allocation, we're forecasting the S&P to return around 8 to 8.5% on investors on a going forward basis. But if you look at the 10-year, the S&P didn't add anything to you. So the risk you took investing in equities over the last 10 years, you know, hasn't helped you. If you look at the emerging markets index, though, it was up 10% on the 10-year annualized basis through 6/30. If you look at the fixed income indices down here, and for the quarter, we actually sort of had almost a repeat of what had happened about a year ago, or a little bit more than that, where there was a flight to quality again. You look at the government bonds were up 4.2%, government credit up 8%, and then the high yield bonds, which are more linked to equities, down negative 1.3% for non-U.S. and then high yield slightly negative there. So you sort of see that flight to credit, to quality again, quality being government bonds. Hedge fund indices was up positive for the quarter, and we, you know, we've talked to you about hedge funds. You do have hedge funds in your portfolio. That we like to hedge funds to be sort of in between bonds and in between equities, so they don't go up as high as equities, but they should give you a little bit of a positive when things are negative. And as you can see here, equities were very negative, bonds were positive more than hedge funds, and they sort of acted in the middle, which is where we expect them to be. And I think for our economy, seeing that we have the NCREIF property index, the real estate index, actually positive is a good sign there. A lot of that is still income, but we're seeing a little bit of appreciation finally coming into the market. On page 3, We have been talking about spreads sort of coming in, but I think because of May and the sort of flight to quality, again, you have spreads. Spreads had been coming in, and then spreads started to widen again. If you look at the high yield spread, it was 570, well, 617, then it was 570, coming in a little bit, and then it jumped up to 700. And the same thing for financials, utilities, industrials, you see those spreads widening again. So, and that has a lot to do with what happened in May. Flip to page 4 and 5. I don't really go over these too much. This just tells you why you should diversify, why you should have money in growth and value, why you should have money in small cap stocks and large cap stocks, you know, why you shouldn't just invest in growth stocks or just in value stocks. The bottom of page 5 shows you why you should invest in international and why you should invest in domestic. It's just showing you that having a diversified portfolio in a lot of different areas will help you over time, because you can never really predict what's going to come in and out of favor in any one quarter. Page 6 shows you the yield curve. The yield curve flattened considerably as compared to the first quarter of 2010. The difference between the 2-year and the 30-year treasury yields decreased from 3.7 to 3.1% at the end of June. The main reasons for the decline in treasury yields were the weakness in risk assets followed by the flight to quality combined with lessened inflationary concerns. So we had talked about deflation for a little bit, and then we were looking at inflation for a little bit, and then this quarter I'm sort of coming to you and they're, you know, starting a little bit worried about deflation again. So it's, we haven't really seen that uptick in inflation like everybody has sort of thought there would be given all the money that, you know, the Fed has thrown at the economy. So bond spreads, another spread chart there at the bottom of page 6. Top of page 7 is just why, you know, domestic bonds and international bonds, why you should have some diversity there. And then 8 and 9, we always throw in a few charts that are quarter specific. And, you know, the top shows bank failures. You know, there's still issues with banks, still concerns there. Their problem list increased from 702 to 775. And the total assets of these problem institutions increased from $403 billion to $431 billion. So there's issues there. The VIX index, a lot of people will talk about the VIX index, and that's just a measure of volatility. And so, you know, the VIX index had been coming in, and then you can see a shot on the VIX index there in May. So uncertainty once again crept into the equity markets as investors sought stability. You know, Greece debt crisis, all those things that we've been talking about. And then page 9 shows home sales. They declined 2.2% in May from April. You know, we talked about monthly inventory before, and we're at 8.3 months. The median existing home price rose 9.1%. compared to February of 2010. So, still having issues with the housing market. That's basically what that's talking about. And then the bottom of page 9 talks about muni bonds. A lot of people always, you know, sort of never look at the muni bond market because they're like, it's boring, you know, it's muni bonds, you know, very exciting things. But actually, there's been issues with muni bonds and defaults on muni bonds, and how's that going to work? Because a lot of cities are having trouble paying. There's no news to anybody here having trouble paying their debts. So that's basically it. I'll get into the performance of your fund under tab 2, page 1, and jump in with any questions you have throughout. As of March 31st, your portfolio was $73 million. The end of June, $66.6 million. Basically due to decline in the market. Page 2 just represents the change in each of your manager's values. And then the top of page 3 shows your performance versus the index. So for the quarter, you were down 7% versus the benchmark of down 7%. So you slightly underperformed the market. If you look at the one-year return, you were up 12.53% versus your policy index of 11. So you outperformed by about 1.5%. And you're outperforming on the 3-year, the 5-year, and the since inception versus your policy index. And what your policy index represents is if you were just in index funds. Okay, so if you take whatever your asset allocation is, and you just invested in index funds, which, you know, very low fees, just index funds, that's what you would have achieved. So this sort of can tell you whether, you know, your managers are doing their job. Are they outperforming their benchmarks? And over a long period of time, which is what you set your portfolio up to, your managers are outperforming. If you look on page 5, we'll go through each manager. Transamerica is having some issues. We've been talking about them. I brought in a large cap growth book for you to look at with new names there. There's somebody who's been on watch list that we have concerns with. They're underperforming on the quarter. They're underperforming on the 1 year. They're underperforming now on the 3 year and underperforming on the 5 year. Since inception, they're outperforming. So that's on an annualized basis. They did outperform by about 1% every year since you've had them, but in the recent period, in the 3 and 5 year, we have concerns. That's why they're on watch list. Wedge Capital outperformed for the quarter, underperformed year to date, underperformed on the 1 year, outperforms on the 3 year annualized, and outperformed significantly since inception. They had a little issues here on the more recent period because of quality, and they're more of a quality manager. You typically have more quality managers in your portfolio. We don't have concerns with them. You haven't had them that long, but on the 3 year in since inception period, they're doing well. They're coming back for the quarter. I think that they will continue to do well for you. Battery March, who's somebody I brought books today. We've been talking about replacing them. Not sure if we should replace them. We brought them in at the last meeting. Concerns there. They're outperforming for the quarter, outperforming year to date, outperforming on the 1 year. They're still underperforming on the 3 year, still underperforming on the 5 year, and outperforming since inception. Basically, the time in which we thought we were going to replace them, they started outperforming. They're outperforming on the 1 year by over 2%. You know, strong comeback. That's what they told us they were going to do when they got into this market. I do have some other names for us to look at. And we had sent you a manager focus. I don't know if you saw that on them. Our research group sat down with Battery March this quarter, met with them, met with their group, met with their process. The small cap area has been a hard area for managers to outperform. We still think that they're a strong manager. We have enough, if you want to fire them, you want to get somebody new, we've had this discussion, I have no problem doing that. Brought you books today with replacements, but I don't think it's an easy call, and we sort of looked at that, and we'll talk about that more once I go through the rest. Templeton, who you saw today, outperforming for the quarter, but underperforming year to date, outperforming on the 1 year. Slightly underperforming on the 3 year and the 5 year, outperforming since inception. Now that's versus the ACWI. If you look at the EFI, which is their primary benchmark, they're outperforming in all periods measured. So they're somewhere between the ACWI and the EFI because the ACWI has a lot more emerging markets than they do. They've been a strong manager for you, done very well. Pyramus outperforming since inception, outperforming on the year. Slightly underperforming for the quarter, but no major issues with them. UBS, you brought in last meeting, significantly outperformed. They're outperforming by 3% since inception period on an annualized basis. They're a great real estate manager, one of the largest in the whole industry. Frag 3, we've had issues there. Your value add real estate manager. They had a great quarter comeback, but you see the 1 year down 42%. Remember, a value-add manager you give a commitment to, so you give them a commitment of, say, $5 million. Pyramus's commitment's $2.4 million, and they draw some of that money. So they've only drawn $600,000 of the $2.4 million. that investment that they've drawn down, they've invested that. What they invested that before sort of 2008, there were some issues with those properties. They brought them all down to a value of basically zero, and they're seeing some appreciation on those properties finally. From what we thought they, you know, sort of were too aggressive in writing them down, but they did that, and you can see some appreciation on them. But they are posed for the rest of your money, so you committed 2.4, they've only drawn down 600,000. They're really in a position to buy in this market with the rest of your money. So we feel like this fund will, as time goes on and they're able to purchase more properties, do well. Atos had a tough quarter, but year-to-date positive. 1 year they're up 9%, which is great. And then since inception, they had the 2008 issue, which is basically when you sort of hired them there. We'd like to see a higher return, but we feel like they're coming back. We expect them to do somewhere between, you know, 8% and 9% each year. That's what we want them to do. So the 1 year number at 9.5% is good, and then that's just your stiff account there. If you just flip to the back, we could go into any manager detailed. We have detailed things on each manager, but I'm not going to go through all that. If you pull the insert out of the back of the book, this shows you your target asset allocation. So you have a target of 34% to large cap, 15 to small cap, 19 to international, 17 to fixed income, 10 to real estate, 5 to hedge funds. You're basically right on your targets. So if you look, you're 34.79 in large cap, 15.52 in small cap. You're a little under in international at 18. You're a little over in fixed income, 18.45, but that's where you hold your money as real estate calls it down. We just did a real estate value add search because you were under your real estate allocation. You're at 7 now. You're supposed to be at 10. So we just hired Penn Square. We committed $2 million, and they've actually already drawn down some money, which is great. They're starting to get your money to work. It's what you wanted, you know, them to do. And Lee did a great job of getting that contract done really fast, so we were able to get our money to work, and great times of being real estate. I think he did a really good job of getting in there. We need to a little bit over in hedge funds, but basically right on your targets.
So, Penn, when was Penn hired, or when did they actually get the money to...
The first draw was this quarter.
This quarter, and they just got another one coming up this month.
Yeah, so it was, May maybe?
Mm-hmm.
May or June was the first capital call. We won't have performance for them until next quarter when they have a full quarter of time, but it's great to see them, you know, buying real estate in this market. So I think you did a great job there. And then we can talk about Mattery Merch.
I just want to talk real quick. Now, not to be reactionary, because everyone should stay in their universe and stay pretty stationary, but if y'all do decide to make a change, should y'all have another meeting, or do you think, how long historically have you put somebody on a watch list before you all pull the trigger? I mean, are they?
You can put some. A lot of times, managers will go on watch list, come off watch list, can go back on watch list.
It could be just the market too.
Yeah.
And the hard part of this is.
Yeah, I mean, if you consistently have somebody who's underperforming on the 3- and 5-year basis, you know, a lot of times you pull the trigger and say, given market conditions, you fire them. But if you're in a market that's abnormal like we were, and that's when they had been doing well, and then their 3- and 5-year number started to fade, and then they said, well, it's this current market, and these are the things we're dealing with. We feel like we're dealing with them well, but this is the market we're in, and we feel we typically underperform in this type of market, and these are the concerns. If we get into this type of market, we feel we're going to start to outperform again. We have the same team, we have the same process, we have, and that's what they did. They did start to outperform. They're outperforming by 2% on the 1 year period. So you take a hard look at them, and it's not a straight call. It's not a call where you say absolutely you terminate them. Obviously we can't decide today anyways because we don't have a quorum, but You can bring in managers. There's, you know, you don't need a vote to do that. You could bring in managers to interview next meeting if you want to, or you could have special...
When we were looking at the small cap, I mean, we were focused on interest there, and I kept saying, yeah, but the large cap is doing worse for us. I mean, if we have to concentrate some efforts, I thought that large cap was letting us down more than the small cap was, if you know what I mean, when we were looking at the numbers. And I thought, and we had a consensus, that maybe we should look at large cap right now, money managers. And you heard me ask. I'm really curious, and I mean, a lot of it's for personal, but I mean, where does Siegel as advisors think? With the way the market's going, should we still go with long-term, shooting out at 5 and 10 years as long-term, or do you think maybe we should start thinking that maybe we should move money a little more frequently to try to stay up with things? And
I think that the data actually shows you that in markets like this and historically, that's absolutely what you don't want to do in a market time like this. You
so
don't
just
want to
keep
move
on going long-term.
You get disciplined and you pull money out when it's performing and put it where it's not performing and have to be disciplined.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at all the data out there, it shows that pension plans that have established guidelines, have established rebalancing programs, have established procedures, mm-hmm. and that don't sort of knee-jerk throw all their money in bonds when the equity markets tank, they typically do better than boards who will try to time things. You know, if you have an asset class that runs, but there are boards who an asset class will run. So say small cap has a huge run, right? And so you have a target of, say, 10 in small cap, right? And it runs, and you get up to 12, 13, 14%. Disciplined boards will take that money off the table and rebalance it into other asset classes. Some trustees get very nervous about that, and they say, well, that's the managers who's doing the best. We can't take their money. But that's why I'm here to tell you that's what you have to do, and you have to be disciplined, and that's why I bring you this little chart that shows, are you in your policy index, and if you're not, where to take money from, where to move money from, and when you need capital calls, that's why I always look at this to see where we take money from. So just because a manager's not doing as well as another manager doesn't mean we necessarily take money from them and give them to the one that works. You've got to keep that balance. Balance between growth and value, the balance between where your targets are.
Stay disciplined and be patient, huh?
Right. Yeah, that's what works. I mean, that's the only thing that sort of you can count on that you can do. So we can look at these books if you want to. We don't have to. You know, I could bring you large cap growth names. I brought them last time. I can bring them again next time. If we're worried about Transamerica, we can bring them in again. We've been talking about Transamerica for a while. They've been on watch list. We brought them in last in February, looks like, on my chart here. Yeah, if we brought them in February, we can bring them in again in November. Instead, I know that it's hard for everybody to get together and you haven't really had a full board, so... I mean, I'm willing to have a meeting in September, October, too,
well,
if you
I'm
want to do something.
Well, I'm pretty sure by our next meeting, no matter what, we can have a quorum. I mean, mm-hmm. we'll pick up one more employee, we're going to have an election, and we'll have somebody that can find the time, if Glenn can.
I mean, I'm willing to do a meeting. I mean, if you want to just... I mean, I'm willing to do a meeting, a special meeting, and I can bring in large cap managers, and I can bring in small cap managers. You can interview people. You can even bring in the people you have existing, bring them in, plus the two or three other people. You can have one day meeting where you do both large growth and you do small cap, bring them in, look at them, and then decide. And you can decide not to hire anybody and retain the people you have, or you can decide to fire both people and hire new people. But this board hasn't been a traditional board that does those, you know.
Yeah.
But it's whatever you want to do. And I don't want to push you, but I also don't want you to think that I'm sitting here saying, oh, just keep everything the same. You don't have to do anything. So.
That's why I asked you. And you summarized it to be patient, you know, and stay with the disciplines we're stuck with, that we've chose to divvy things up and ride a little longer. I mean, I think we should look at the large cap more than we should at the small cap, the Battery Marsh, even though we've pulled them in twice.
And I mean, if you want to, I can bring in Transamerica the next meeting, and I can bring in two or three people as possible replacements. If you wanna look at people, I don't know. That makes your meeting too long, but I don't know if that's a concern or what. But I want your portfolio to be, you know, my thing, I always joke, like, I want your portfolio to be firing on all cylinders. You know, I don't want any draggers. I don't want anything. I want everybody outperforming. That's what we set it up to do. There's no point in paying somebody if they're underperforming. You know, we're not a charity case here. People, that's what we hire them to do, is to outperform and do well. I mean, that's the only way your portfolio is going to do well over time, and you're under lots of pressures to get your actuarial return. I mean, we can only do as well as the markets do, but, you know, we want those managers to outperform. And I think at last meeting, Transamerica wasn't necessarily, I think, underperforming on the five-year with the underperformance for the quarter. I think that flipped their five-year to be underperforming. I think last time when I came, their three-year was under, but their five-year wasn't under yet.
They had one big negative, and then this last big negative is enough to pull down your average.
Right.
We all understand how averages work, but...
Right. So they're still outperforming since inception by about 1%, but you hate for a manager to eat away your gains.
Yeah.
You hate for that to do that. So.
When was the last... you said you had a book on the large cap managers. Was that... when was that done?
Last meeting.
You've got it.
Yeah, what did we do, though? We just looked at it and said we didn't want to do anything?
Yeah, we sort of tabled it. And...
What do you think?
Well, you know, this is where I struggle sometimes, wondering if quarterly is not often enough to make these decisions, or, and this is why I was asking Rose, or maybe we just stay disciplined and say, well, let's wait a little longer. But the personal side of me wonders, how long do you wait before you keep on losing? You know, it's like, can you stop it? And of course, everybody says, well, the averages are down and we're still staying above the average, so we're not losing as much as everybody else. But it's hard for me to swallow when I see that we go from 74 million to 66 million, and I look at a couple years ago, we were up at 74 million. We got back up there after a couple years, and now we're dropping again. It's disheartening
and
to me.
And
the Dow Jones
Industrial was where? When you were at 74 million? I'm just...
No, I understand. And that's where I'm at, Rick. And it's like, I know that, you know, I don't understand this real well, but I figure I was voted by the majority of the population, the employees, to be here and represent them. So I asked the questions.
Yes, yes.
You know, and I figured...
I think you should let me bring in some managers.
Okay, well, that's what we pay you for, is give us some advice. You know,
instead of bringing those other two, why don't we not bring them? If we're going to do it, and let's do it all, and do it for the next meeting instead of having a special
okay,
meeting.
Okay, that's fine.
Because those other two that we were going to bring in, we don't really have any issues with them.
No. We don't need to bring them in.
Why don't we do that?
All right. Sounds good to me. I mean, we can give you direction without a vote, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't need a vote for that.
Yeah.
This is what I'd like to do. You tell me if this is okay. I'd like to bring in two new growth managers, and then bring in your existing guy. I'd like to bring in two small cap managers, replacements, and your existing guy.
All the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that'll take 3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours.
It's 3 hours.
So we're not going to deal with anything else?
Well, really today I don't think we have anything else. I mean, there's the administrative agreement, which we can deal with when we do the ballot counting. There's the classes and the certifications, which we can also deal with at the ballot. I mean, because that's not going to take long. I mean, we're just going to discuss what it is and boom.
Okay. I'll keep everything else off the agenda except for maybe approval of the minutes. And I don't have to bring in your existing guy. If you want to just keep it to two, I can just bring in the new people. But
well, I always want to hear what their thoughts are and I mean,
I think that's good.
Yeah.
Why are we doing both over the next meeting?
She's just saying let's do it all.
Do it all and get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And that's the only thing I think.
I think we've been talking about it a while.
Holy cow, yeah.
I think we've been talking about it a while, and That doesn't mean you have to fire them when they, you know, but
right.
that at least you have competition. You got to hear from what you could have.
You know, I figure
right?
it's always good. They see the competition
right.
sitting in the same lobby as
right.
them. It's like, oh,
right.
we're getting fired or not, you know.
So you're bringing Battery March
and
Transamerica.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I'll bring you two.
So we got a plan for a long meeting next time, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to bring lunch?
We'll be done before lunch. Oh. 9 to 12.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. How about we promise to get you out of
here
by
12:15? So
yeah,
gotta,
that doesn't give Lee a long lunch, but
yeah.
I often miss those.
Yeah,
that's okay.
You could have fooled me, Lee.
Yeah. But that's the thing. You know, the worst time of the day to eat, right, is when I eat typically 8-9 o'clock at night, and
yeah,
don't we all?
I'd like to start the meeting at 8:30, though, if possible. We've done that before last meeting.
Well, is that you give the people coming? I mean,
they
work
them.
For us. You know, you just tell them what time to show up.
Right,
I don't know if that affects Lee, but that way it'll just give me a little bit of time at the end to talk and go over performance quickly, and
uh-huh.
so I can get you out of here by 12:15.
Okay.
I don't want to have to.
8:30.
Okay.
Somehow stress that when you send it out.
Put it in bold.
Especially to the ones that are here, you know.
Well, I guess the other thing we have to cover is Lee's new schedule for next year, if we can maybe coordinate that. But that should be real quick discussed.
Yeah,
right?
Usually Lee's office will send something to
yeah.
me. I'll send it out to everyone.
And he's going to push him to try to see if we can change some dates or see if something works with your traveling
mm-hmm.
plans. And
just let me know
yeah.
through email if it is or isn't. We'll coordinate that with OTD and their schedule.
I mean, I understand Mondays. I love Mondays. It gets me out of the house. No more honeydews. I tell her I can't wait to get to work. Get to relax a little.
So I think I'm good unless you have other questions or concerns we want to go over.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other matters that we really can cover right now. Is there anything you need to tell us that we need to be aware of?
Yeah, I have a few things I always want to plan
I figured
to
as much.
Because we'll need to make a decision in November one way or another with respect to whether we want to file with the IRS for a favorable determination letter or not. We've touched on that ever since our new plan with the IRS compliance was adopted. We said we'd be discussing whether or not we want to do that, and now the time has come to discuss it, and if we're going to do it, do it. If not, that's fine too. But I just want to give you some of the considerations to start thinking about. We are in cycle E filings if we are going to file for a favorable determination letter. That means we have to file by January 31st, 2011. The time's arrived. We're not required to have a favorable determination letter to be treated as a qualified plan by the IRS and enjoy the tax benefits that go with that, which are primarily pre-tax member contributions to the plan. Our members don't pay annual income tax as the value of the accrued benefits increase, and we don't pay tax on the earnings of this plan. So you can see they are significant. We've said before that for all the decades these plans have been around, the IRS has not paid attention to public sector plans in terms of examinations or audits, and now they are starting to, and that's why we should have this discussion. We met with some high-ranking individuals at IRS about a month ago. Scott and I and some other attorneys nationally do what we do. And they're really not very helpful at this point in terms of giving us guidance in you know, which way to go on this. The downside to filing, one of the downsides, is the expense associated with it. Filing fees are $2,000 to $5,000. Going through the process, probably $15,000 to $20,000. And I think we'd all agree this is no time to be hitting these plans with additional expenses. And frankly, we're pretty upset about it, given the environment that we're in. And again, these plans have gone on for decades, and we haven't had to do this. So that's a significant downside. And we had what the IRS is saying, and these individuals are saying, they're trying, the word they use is round up. They're trying to round up as much information about public sector plans as possible. They originally, as we discussed, said they were going to send public pension plan surveys to about 200 plans nationwide. They've abandoned that, for now at least, in favor of, and you'll recall we asked everybody to be on the lookout for those, in favor of, I think, seeing how many applications for these favorable determination letters they're going to get. We asked them, we said, well, you know, okay, if we don't file, and you audit the plan, say subsequent to January 31st, what, if any, is the downside to that? And that's where they were beating around the bush and non-committal. They sort of hinted at, and sort of an implicit threat, said, well, you know, if we're examining your plan on our initiative, which means they come and say they want to audit, versus as part of the determination letter process, we, you know, on things we find, we you know, maybe look more favorably upon you, is what they're saying. And they can find things with any plan. You know, their examiners will find things with any plan if they want to. They say their motivation for this project is to be able to provide guidance and assistance in public sector plans. We have some concerns
about
whether there's not other reasons for that, particularly when you realize, and you guys may know, I've been hearing cities have been audited. I know some specific examples in Florida over the last year where they've come in, been audited, been fined, one in the central part of the state, $20,000 or $30,000. Things like, you know, with expense logs, you know, if you go and buy gas, you're supposed to make contemporaneous entry and written records, those kinds of things. If they weren't being done, then they come up, you know, and fine. So, you know, it makes us wonder whether or not it's part of deficit reduction of some sort. We don't know. And a number of trustees said, well, you know, I don't like the idea of raising our hands, putting the target on our back and saying, you know, come on in and, you know, go to the expense of going through the process. Nonetheless, it's a decision as fiduciaries, you know, you need to make yay or nay. And some boards, I think, will want to file, and I think many will not. But that's all the information we have at this point about it. We're staying in contact on a more than a weekly basis, and hopefully we'll have some more information to make our decision in November. But that's where we are right now.
Okay.
And that's really it. Give some, you know, think about that. The only other thing, just as a matter of information, we've been discussing the HELPS 2 legislation. That's the healthcare enhancement for local public servants, the $3,000 insurance premium tax deduction. It's pending with the House Ways and Means Committee, and of significance, it would extend the benefit that can now be provided to public safety officers, to all public employees who retire with a normal or disability retirement benefit. It will also remove the requirement for administration that money be transferred directly from the pension plan to the insurance provider. That requirement is the reason why most plans, public safety officer plans nationally, have not implemented the program yet, because of the administrative burden and expense associated with that. And from my perspective, most importantly, potential trustee liability. Under the existing program, this board would be in charge, completely responsible for administration. If a problem occurred, premium check doesn't get to the company, coverage lapse, somebody gets sick, well, they come to the board. And right now, where the few places that have implemented the program, we provide a waiver of liability to be signed by the retiree against the board, but that simply means that we can raise that as a defense. We're still, you know, embroiled in the process, which we prefer not to be. So if this passes, that's a real benefit, removing the board from the administration. And then the other item we mentioned is that the $3,000 would be indexed from July 1st of 08 forward. So there's varying opinions on whether it would pass or not. I think it should. I think all public employees ought to have that benefit. There's some federal laws in terms of earlier retirement ages make sense to apply to public safety officers because of the earlier, typically earlier retirements. This doesn't. You know, it seemed fair to not apply to all public employees. So some think it has a good chance. I've heard others, some folks in Washington say, well, if it was going to pass, they would have hooked on to the Obamacare and it would have gone as part of that, but I don't think necessarily. So we'll keep watching it and I'll keep you posted.
Is there any more push with the EFRS?
In
trying to take over some of these municipalities and pension plans and all?
Oh, well, this last, of course, we're going to be seeing that around the corner again. You know, bills being pre-filed in Tallahassee, and we certainly did last year. You know, we saw significant legislation, both for police officer firefighter funds as well as for general employee funds, which were really directed at two things, trying to remove impediments from local law plans, municipal plans, moving to FRS, and proposals to encourage members of the plans to want to go into FRS or defined contribution plan. So that was the thrust of last year's legislation, and we may, and we'll certainly, there may be some bills pre-filed by our next meeting, so I'll keep you apprised of them, as we did last year. And I think we'll definitely see it again. You know, one of the proposals last year was to put benefit limitations, we talked about this, benefit limitations on maximum defined benefits that could be paid out annually, and it was severely reduced. That came under the category of providing encouragement for members to elect to go to a defined contribution plan. You know, thinking, well, home would be cut off here, may as well take a shot with defined contributions. So. But that, I'm sure, is around the corner again this year. You know, all the meetings we've had over all the years, and it's been a lot at this point, I don't think I have bad news. It's informative or things that we have to do, but this time I just feel like this is bad news, you know, it's stuff we would rather not have on the horizon. But yeah, this thing, the IRS, you know, again, you know, these kind of expenses, you know, imposing on these plans. Oh, and in that regard, since Scott and I, since we represent, you know, 160 plus plans, we're determining the most cost-efficient way to do this for whatever of the plans want to do it, so do it at least expense possible.
Well, the number you came up with, I think you said 12 to 15 grand to get it together. Where did that come from?
15 to 20. Well, the filing fees are 2 to 5, depending on size of the plan participants. That goes to the IRS. The 12 to 15 or 15 to 20, that is based on we contacted 4 different attorneys that do nothing but deal with the IRS on these kinds of things. We're all set up to do it, and we're getting some quotes from them.
Is this more stimulus for the lawyers instead of the engineering firms now? Kind of didn't work one way, so now they're going to go a different way? I'm sorry, you know.
No.
He's
always messing with Lee.
It's definitely some stimulus for the lawyers, that's for sure. But in this case, again, we're going to do it in the most cost-effective, meaning cheapest way it can be done. Now, some of them, once you're into it, you can't tell up front, because you can file this, and this has happened. So not with us, but another attorney. Same filing, with 2 different plans, but same compliance items, plans run roughly the same way. 2 different examiners got it. One of the examiners just went right on through, sent the favorable letter back. Another examiner, they're still going back and forth, came with this whole long list of things. He said, "Oh, no." And which the IRS acknowledges is one of the problems with this, is the inconsistency depending upon who you happen to draw.
Who sits and looks
at
it.
You know, as an examiner, yeah. So.
Well, Lee, out of all these plans you represent, how many are actually going to go forward and do this?
Well, it's in the process of being determined now. We'll know, I'll know better, I can give you a better count in November. Right now I've gotten, you know, just some comments from the trustees. I've had it, most don't comment at this point, just, you know, think about it, but I've had, you know, some trustees say, oh yeah, well, that's something we should do, and others say, you know, why should we put the target on our back and, you know, enter that process, and it's expensive to do it. So we've gone both ways so far. And I would say the sentiment so far, Glenn, is most are inclined to think, no, I don't want to do it.
I guess it's weighing out the pros and cons. You know,
I say we don't like it. We don't like it. And we don't like either the fact that they're really, it's everything's implicit. You know, when you ask the question, well, what happens if we don't do it? And they're just kind of beating around the bush and won't commit, except the hint at maybe, well, maybe we'll be a little tougher on you if we're having a discussion of an audit they initiate as opposed to our application.
Okay. And decide what they can get away with, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they are sensitive to the fact, and they mention this too, they say, well, you know, anything we do, just like the city gets fined $20,000, $30,000, in case of the pensions, it's going to hurt the members of the plan.
Right.
And they haven't been as interested or as hard on public sector plans over the years. One reason is because unlike private sector, which corporations have a significant profit motive, they tend to not like that, you know, unlike, so they, you know, local governments, they have a tendency to not want to come down on, like, well, that's why they haven't even done anything in terms of examinations and audits, like corporations, but it's,
well, what kind of things would they come in here and find? I mean, what would...
Oh, they look, if, you know, we had on those public pension plan surveys, they did a pilot program last year. I told you about this, and it happened, one of our clients up in the Panhandle received one of the pilot surveys, and this is what would have gone, or some modification of it, to the over 200 that they said they were going to send out. 64 questions dealing with anything you could imagine, dealing with operation issues, language in the plan that's required to be there, benefits in the plan, what are your communications with your retirees, what are your communications with your current plan members. It's a laundry list. That's why I say they can find something with any plan that they pick up. So, decide November and we'll...
Well, you said we'll have to file by January, right?
January 31st, as part of Cycle Lead, yeah, which is where government plans are now. So, and there'll be another cycle for government plans somewhere down the road. It's just a question of whether... I mean, we're really kind of hoping not to get audited if we don't do it. Now, last year, they did somewhere, they told us, only between 15 and 25, somewhere in that range last year, for governmental plans. Well, that's a small number compared to how many are out there. I mean, you know, right off the bat, you've got at least 50 state plans, more than that, because most states have more than one state plan. And then, of course, you've got all the municipal plans like ours, so that's a small number. But I'll put the most current information there is at our November meeting, and we just decide.
Yeah, we can't make a decision without a...
We'll do it or we won't. Yeah. And we're not going to have, it's not going to be black and white. We're not going to have the kind of information or as much as we would like, but all we can do is the best we can do in that regard.
I forgot to pass this out, so I'm going to use it. I think you had it electronically, but...
Rose, I hope that's good news so we can end on a high.
Yeah. Well, this was just a battery march thing in our assessment of what we thought about them, and I'll leave a couple extra when we met with them. And then I just want to remind everybody, you do have usernames and passwords to our website. You can go in and all the information's up there. So your performance report, any search books we do, the manager focuses, anything we do, you have a username and password, and any new board member will get them the username and password, and they can go up. And anywhere you are, you can look at it. If you're in the library computer, you're anywhere. As long as you have your username and password, you can pull up, you know, if you're bored or something, you want to go read my performance report. It's all up there, so.
I'll give you an example of frustrations dealing with the IRS. We had it right here with the police plan. In connection with that $3,000 tax deduction, it was available for firefighters and police officers effective January 1st of 07. As I mentioned, some plans implemented, and actually the police plan did here, I don't know if the fire plan did, but so we had at least a couple folks who took it on their tax return with 07, 08, mm-hmm. You may have heard about this. Looks like, yeah, last year, and the same thing happened other places too. So it's not just unique to a particular examiner that does for Ocala, but they in 09, they got tax bill, penalties, and interest because the examiner didn't know about their eligibility to do it. And then, of course, they had to spend some time and effort to get it. It got straightened out. But that's just an example where the examiner didn't even know what the provisions of the law were. We had a situation, I think, here too, where we've had individuals go to their tax professionals, prepare their taxes, and they've been told, they said, you say, you can't do that. And they could, and then I just kind of tell them, I said, well, you need to go tell your CPA to get TurboTax, because it's on the TurboTax program.
You're just not going to enough classes, is it?
When is our ballot counting gonna be?
The 19th, Thursday afternoon.
At what time?
3:00.
In this room here?
Yes.
Okay. Can we get a quorum for that?
I hope so.
Yeah, you'll need to certify the results.
I was stressed that I needed all three of you here. That's why it was imperative that...
Well, we understand things happen, and I'm hoping Kim can...
Yes.
I'd go talk to her boss.
Well, she's been pretty good about it.
And sometimes things just pop up. I mean, I understand that. It's...
Sure they do.
Well, but this is important to get an extra person, so it doesn't hurt us as much when
right.
we... The other one is the other person we're missing. How do we go about that? I mean, an outside person getting on.
Well,
didn't y'all cover that at the pension
meeting?
We didn't completely come to a final. I was going to ask Rick, you got somebody to suggest? Since he said it pretty much goes to him anyway, but...
Diane was in here. She would like to apply for that position. And then I had a lady...
Just go down to clerk and fill out an application.
I had a lady that was supposed to be here today. She's a retired CPA, but she works 2 days, volunteers. She's retired, so she volunteers with her church. And Mondays are bad for her because that's when they do the collection plan.
Well, and Rick's thought when we pulled all the boards together, you weren't here, but... He's feeling that maybe we should have someone on the banker side or somebody who's really in investments, so we have someone who's a little more knowledgeable.
How about investments? Investments?
Yeah, about investments, too. Because you've heard me say it many times, I'm probably the most ignorant here, but at least I'm not afraid to ask questions. And I figure I've been voted in by the majority of the population to represent them, so...
Well, it's kind of like we have to go out and recruit these people.
I know, it's hard,
they
and I'm not
just
sure...
They automatically apply. When I came in here for something and...
somebody told you there was an opening.
No, it was like, you need to do this, so...
somebody strong-armed you?
Yeah. So I don't think you're going to get anybody just walk into clerk's office and apply.
The clerk's office has posted a notice.
Yeah, but posting it is one thing. Getting somebody...
Yes. It's almost like we have to try to solicit somebody.
You got to go talk them into it. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Because, you know, it's...
Especially if you want to focus on an investment guy, you know, you got to go figure out who that's going to be.
It's got to be personally rewarding for him because the rest of us, the pay isn't that great, you know, and the responsibilities kind of stink, you know, it's...
Right.
All right. So that's what we're looking more for is somebody on the investment
well,
side.
Well, and that's what our city manager is kind of...
Well, he's probably right. We don't have anybody
right.
with that background.
You're the closest thing we have. At least, you know, you've been through the finance side. You know, working
for a bank.
What
about the people that are coming up for that other position? You've got people that might be finance-ish?
City employee, we have one who used to be in the financial department. He's working on his master's now, isn't he? Mike Brennan?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard.
I think he's still going to school for...
Yeah, Mike's pretty knowledgeable. He's been here forever.
Yeah, he's sat in a few
meetings. He's been around the meetings for the last 2 or 3 years. I was surprised he wasn't here today.
He was on the fire board.
Oh, okay.
I think he wants to get on the general employees board now.
Well, I have one guy in mind on that side that he's retired manager of used to be Morgan Stanley. I don't know if he'd have an interest, but he's an older but very knowledgeable. I can talk to him if you want.
Well, we have to get somebody.
We need to get somebody on here, because having a meeting, you got two people show up, it's pretty bad.
It's great to see everybody, but yeah, we can't make any decisions. And do we then call for, you know, a new meeting in order to get some things resolved or put it off? I mean, some of this stuff we're putting off because we have the ballot count and we have to get together, which that's good, but...
Well, let's put our thinking hats on, see if we can come up with some people and try to recruit somebody in that background, you know?
Yeah, I know a younger guy who was with EBS, but he's like, well, I don't want to donate time. I'm like, dude, you know, it's a public servant, you know, it's... I do some community time sometimes. I mean, if you want to look good on your resume, it always shows good that you do something like this.
So you're looking for one more? You're going to have an election, right? That's
what we're having an election for...
That's you, and there's one other?
There's a lady from the hospital who sits here. She just missed today.
So you're just missing one.
Well, yeah, right now we're shy two, and we're getting ready to have the election to bring on an employee.
Right.
We have two employees, and then we have three from outside.
Right, that's a city council appointment.
Yeah.
Well, they say that, but city manager ends up doing it. Who's,
right, well, I mean, he's going
to
bring...
Pretty much we figure city council wants to stay away from making these decisions. We've been on the city manager. So that's where we're at. We're just trying to find some options for him. I mean, there was one gentleman who applied, and I think right now...
somebody applied?
Yeah, there was an older gentleman. We had a city council workshop, and he volunteered. He said he used to work for a bank down in South Florida. But I think OPD has an opening as well as fire does, and he just wants to donate some time. I don't think it's good if he's on two boards. I don't know if he can be.
Dual office holder.
Yeah, so...
Is there a rule against that?
Yep.
Okay.
There you go.
Did not have that.
Yeah, so...
That's why you got to leave here, see? That's the answer.
Well, see?
That's the word.
And I have a little common sense about this. It almost makes sense that it can't be, but...
All righty. I guess we can go, huh?
Yep. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
I need you to come by our building sometime. We can never do it on the edge on the second floor.
Up there in the closet, yeah.
Back room.
I can come over now since I'm done here.
Let me know. Out of curiosity.